Welcome to the Art of Mathematics. I'm Carol Jacoby, and joining us once again is Jeannie Lazzarini. And we're going to be talking about kaleidoscopes. Welcome to the show, Jeannie.
Well, thank you for having me back. I really enjoy this.
I had a kaleidoscope when I was a kid. I didn't understand it. It was this cardboard tube, and I looked in one end, and it looked like a colored snowflake. And when I turned the end of it, it would all kind of flop around and make different shapes, and it would change. And yes. So I turned around and I looked at the other end, and it looked like kind of a jumble of pieces of broken glass or something. And I never really understood how it worked. What interests you about kaleidoscopes?
Well, very much the same with me. I've always had an interest in math and how it relates to everything, in my opinion, and art. And I always thought of the kaleidoscopes as a form of art. So if you think about whenever you look in a mirror or squint at sunlight glinting from a lake, you see a reflection. And when you look at a piece of white paper, you're seeing light scattered from it. Large telescopes use reflection to form an image of stars and other astronomical objects. I just always have been fascinated by how these things merge together. The law of reflection got me thinking. The angle of incidence equals the angle of reflection, about one of my favorite toys, which is the kaleidoscope. So I know you realize how it felt when you were a kid looking through it and how astonishing it was. And it's like you never see the exact same pattern twice. It's kind of like magic. So this breathtaking art to me is fleeting. And though you see an endless series of beautiful arrays, they only last a few moments before being replaced by the next breathtaking image. So I was wondering, how could there be a connection between mathematics and the multiple varieties of designs caused by reflection through a kaleidoscope?
Yeah, I was wondering about that too. In fact, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't connect it to math or even reflections. It was just sort of this magic thing.
Yes, I thought so too. So let me help to shed light on this topic. Let me further go into a little bit of the history and background of kaleidoscopes, if that's okay. And then you'll be able to see how this kind of emerged over time. So for starters, what is a kaleidoscope? A kaleidoscope is basically an optical instrument. Usually it's thought of as a toy with two or more reflecting surfaces, such as mirrors, something shiny, that are tilted to each other at an angle so that one or more parts of objects on one end of these mirrors is shown in a regular symmetrical pattern when viewed from another end because of repeated reflection. The angle of incidence equals the angle of reflection again. So I've mentioned before in other podcasts with you, symmetry. And as a reminder, an object that is symmetrical remains constant, even if it's subjected to transformations, which could be translations, reflections, rotations, scaling, etc. The reflection of these objects creates a beautiful array of colors and patterns, an example really of motions of the plane being generated by reflections. The word kaleidoscope, being half Greek, I'm very proud of this, comes from the Greek words kalos, beautiful, eidos, form, and skopos, watcher. So it roughly translates to beautiful form watcher. So on the history of kaleidoscopes, the ancient Greeks and mathematician Ptolemy were one of the first people to find that you could see patterns in multiple mirrors that are next to each other. Now, researchers have found pieces of polished obsidian used as mirrors as long as 8,000 years ago. Ancient Egyptians used polished surfaces as mirrors. By the 17th century, the Hall of Mirrors in the Palace of Versailles became a trophy of French achievement. Have you been there?
Yes, I have. Yes, it's interesting because mirrors now have become so common, but apparently in his age,
yes,
something luxurious.
Right. It was something that was new to people. They hadn't really thought of it. So by the early 19th century, scientists were investigating methods of using light and optics to improve technologies that would allow middle classes time for leisure activities. Believe it or not, I have a lot of these toys, which are called philosophical toys. They became a form of amusement for the masses while demonstrating many advances in these scientific discoveries. For example, the thaumatrope has images which are spun on a string until they appear to be one single image. So one side would have a picture and the other side would have a picture, and you spin it and it looks like one picture, like a bird in a cage. Or a stereopticoscope, a device with two images that when viewed together appear to give the perception of depth, which I definitely have some examples of that. Or the stroboscopic disc, which provided a series of images in rapid succession. And the zoetrope, I actually made a big giant zoetrope once in one of my classes. And they actually had to create the images that went on the inside. It's a cylindrical thing with drawings on the inside that are viewed through slits on the opposite side as the cylinder rotates.
I've seen films of those. I remember seeing one. It had little slits on it and it went around. I tried to make one on a record player, but I couldn't get it to work because I didn't know how to draw the pictures in the right places. But if you put the pictures in the right places, this one I remember had pictures of a horse. And when it went around, the horse would run.
So those are really fun. And actually, also like finasconoscopes and praxiscopes and flip books, they're all seen as precursors of film. And they led to the invention of cinema at the end of the 19th century. Disney was very much involved with using these techniques as well. If you go to the Disney Museum in San Francisco, you'll see examples of those there. But in 1816, Dr. David Brewster arranged mirrors of objects in a tube and called it the kaleidoscope. So it was kind of like one of those other toys that sort of came out at the time that I was talking about. But it was not just a toy. It was also intended for use by designers and artists. So later on in 1873, American Charles Bush patented many improvements, including the use of an ampoulos, small sealed glass vial holding medicine. Tiny ampoules already had been used in some kaleidoscopes, but Bush's patent specified them with two or more liquids of different densities or character, or liquid with a solid or solids. This allowed even more intricate patterns. I actually have several examples of those myself, where there's a tube and you put crystals or things inside and they float down at different speeds. And the speed causes the different reflections to look different too each time. Yeah, they come in all kinds of shapes, like tube shapes, barrel shapes, kaleidoscopes, as well as conical and some freeform designs. Some are handheld. Some contain wands with a movable transparent sealed tube containing liquid showing the sinking or floating objects, like I just mentioned, past the end of reflectors, while others are fitted with stands. Some have object wheels or carousels rotating on an axis attached to the end or the center of the kaleidoscope. Others have transparent marble covering at one end. So while you look through, you're looking at anything around you where light hits it, it causes reflections in the mirrors. Very interesting. So all sorts of things can be used as objects to reflect into a kaleidoscope. You know, anything, really. Beads, bits of feathers, whatever. They're all going to create an amazing design when you use these different kaleidoscopes.
So how do you do this? How do you put the mirrors together to get these effects?
Well, there are different mirror configurations. Two or three mirrors are the most common. Some are tapered or have a larger number of mirrors attached in untraditional ways, 3D or umbrella shape. And I'll talk about those later on. This really gets involved with the math. Okay, well, let's start out with something simple. Think of a pizza cut into equal wedge slices. If you put one slice between two angled mirrors, you'd see a whole pizza made up of lots of reflections of that one slice.
That's how the kaleidoscope worked that I had as a kid. It was probably just two mirrors in there.
Yeah.
And it was reflecting whatever was seen through that little piece.
Yes, it could have been. There's 360 degrees in a circle, so every pizza slice is a portion of that circle. The fatter the slice, the wider the angle is at its point. The thinner the slice, the smaller that angle. So the size of the angle determines how many times you see the reflection. If your pizza slice is 1/4 of the whole pizza, the angle is going to be at 90 degrees. In a kaleidoscope with two mirrors, the slice appears 4 times in the image at the end of the kaleidoscope. If the slice is half that size, a 45 degree angle, it's reflected 8 times in the image. The smaller the slice, the more it appears. So if you drew a line down the center of an image, you'd say each half would be a mirror image of the other. In a kaleidoscope, each repeated image is symmetrical to the one next to it.
So in my kaleidoscope that I had as a kid, I remember it having 6 points, which I guess would be 12 pieces.
Yeah, that's possible. Well, there are basically 2 systems of mirrors in kaleidoscopes. The 2 mirror, which produces 1 central image, and the 3 mirror, which produces images reflected through the entire viewing. Both systems are arranged within a triangular configuration within the tube, similar to a prism. So maybe if I can explain mirror image, that would help. The 2 mirror system has 2 mirrors arranged in a V with the third side of the triangle blackened out or non-reflective, such as opening and closing a book. The angle of the V determines the number of reflections in the overall detailed pattern. The basic rule is that in a 2-mirror system, the angle of the mirrors must equally divide the 360 degrees of a circle. So with a 90-degree angle, the image produced would have 4-fold symmetry. Continuing this line of thinking, you get the following. With a 45-degree angle, you'll get 8-fold symmetry, or a 4-pointed star. With a 36-degree angle, you get 10-fold symmetry with a 5-pointed star. 30-degree, 12-fold symmetry, 6-pointed star.
That must be what I had. That must have been what was in my kaleidoscope that I had as a kid. 2 angles at 30 degrees.
Good. That's great. And also like 22.5 degree, you'll get 16-fold symmetry, 8-pointed star, 15-degree, 24-fold, 12-point star, 10-degree, 36-fold, 18-point star, and 1-degree would be a 360-fold symmetry with 180-point star.
Wow. So is there such a thing?
Oh, yeah. There could be. Is there? Sure.
Has anybody ever built one?
I don't know of that. I've never seen one. Like
that would be interesting. Okay.
If you follow this line of reasoning, yeah, sure. It could work. Well, that was the 2-mirror system. Now, the 3-mirror system it's in a triangle, and all of them, all the sides are mirrors. So it's a 3-mirror system, except the 3rd mirror takes the place of the blackened side of the triangle in the 2-mirror system. The results in reflections throughout the entire viewing are different. Symmetrical images are much harder to achieve in the 3-mirror system, because now there are 3 angles which must be accurate instead of only the 1 angle in the 2-mirror system. There are 2 requirements that have to work for a 3-mirror system. One of the requirements I'll call factoid 1, and as before, in the 2-mirror system, same thing. In order to get a symmetric image, the mirrors must be set at an angle which be evenly divided into 360 degrees of the circle, such as 90 degrees divides 4 times, 60, 6 times, and so forth. Factoid 2, though, in addition to this, for a 3-mirror system, the sum of the angles must total 180 degrees, which is the number of degrees in a triangle. Since the sides of triangles all have to add up to 180 degrees, if you have mirror angles that are 30 degrees, you'll get 6 different patterns, because 180 degrees divided by 30 is 6. So with these 2 factoids, only 3 combinations produce the desired effects. The most common is the 60-60-60 equilateral triangle. Each angle produces 6-fold patterns of continuous triangles. The second possible combination is the 45-45-90 isosceles right triangle. This relationship produces 8-fold patterns at the 45-degree angles and a 4-fold pattern at the 90-degree angle. The third combination is the 30-60-90 right triangle. In this case, all 3 angles are different, and this causes 3 different symmetries: 30-degree with 12-fold, 60-degree with 6-fold, 90-degree with 4-fold, forming many more intricate images. All of these 3 mirror configurations use pure symmetrical patterns where each image linked together. but you can still see interesting yet fractional parts of images that are visibly symmetrical, even if only one or two of the angles divide evenly into 360 degrees.
This is interesting that there are only these certain ones that satisfy both of your requirements. So if I took my childhood kaleidoscope, which was at 30 degrees, I don't think I could build a three mirror system with it. I was thinking, if I just put a mirror on the back of that, I would have a three mirror system. But you're telling me that won't work.
Well, it would if it was 30, 60, 90.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In that case, though, what I'm saying is the other angles, 60 and 90, are going to produce their own type of images, their own type of symmetries. So you're going to get symmetries bouncing off of symmetries, which causes a much more intricate pattern.
Are there any others besides two and three? I mean, this is getting complicated enough, but
I know.
Can you go beyond that?
You actually can. There are systems. There's something called the square four mirror. It results in repeated square patterns, while the four mirror rectangular configurations, if you had that, create repeated rectangular patterns. These patterns appear striped, since the reflections move directionally up, down, right, left. It's kind of a different system. What about cylindrical tubes? If you line a cylindrical tube with reflective material like mylar or something, and then look at the objects, they produce a spiraling effect since there are no angles involved in the style. The reflections move up through the tube asymmetrically. By tapering a three mirror triangle as in a pyramid, this is interesting, and viewing through the large opening, you see a spherical 3D appearance. Also, a polyangular arrangement of the two mirror system, where one or both of the mirrors can be adjusted, changes the angle of the V and the number of reflections. You can move things around, so you can actually change that. There are other degrees that can be used in a kaleidoscope. Such example is 60 and 36. For 60 degrees, you have 6 folds, as we've mentioned, and 3 points of the kaleidoscope. For 30 degrees, it would be 10 folds and 5 points to get an accurate pattern in a kaleidoscope. So accurate means it has a symmetrical appearance. And you get, like I said before, you can have fractions of those angles, but you'll get fractional images too. They will not be symmetrical.
That's interesting. What about the length versus the width of the mirror?
There's no formula for that, but there are certain considerations in deciding the length and width of a straight mirror system. A kaleidoscope that has mirrors that are about 8 inches long allows a person to see the image clearly with normal eyesight. Shorter and longer mirrors need a lens to help a person focus on the image. A wider or larger mirror system allows more light to enter the mirror chamber. So simply put, the way objects reflect by movements from side to side or combined with others in a symmetrical symphony are what make kaleidoscopes so appealing and seemingly magical. It's kind of arbitrary in a way, but it's not. It's also mathematics that are going on. So to me, quite similar to the harmonic visual composition would affect, likened to a musical composition, kaleidoscopes orchestrate the arrangement of mirrors, angles, and mathematics, and turn ordinary objects into uniquely fascinating works of art.
I was mystified by this thing as a child and didn't realize there was some math behind it. And thank you for clarifying that mystery for me. By the way, when you're listening to this, you're probably trying to visualize some of these things, as I am. Jeannie's supplying with me with some links and also instructions on how to make your own kaleidoscope, which is fun. So you can see pictures of the things she's talking about, some of which I've never heard of. That'll be on the website, theartofmathematicspodcast.com.
That'll be wonderful. I think it's really a fun thing to investigate, and it's always going to be new and different every time you look through.
That's great. And it's a lot more complex than I ever imagined. Thank you so much, Jeannie. Really appreciate you coming and talking to us about kaleidoscopes.
Definitely my pleasure, Carol. Thank you so very much for having me again.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have something you'd like to share on the air or a suggestion for a guest for a future show, leave a message at anchor.fm slash The Art of Mathematics with hyphens, or email me at cjacoby@jacobyconsulting.com. And if you'd like to learn how to get answers from data, check out my class at excelfordecisionmakers.com. See you next month. Thanks for listening.